Welcome to the Sunshine Economy, Real Estate in 2017. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. Ask two of the highest profile real estate developers about their outlook for the year ahead, and you shouldn't be surprised by their optimism. Real estate development, after all, takes a sunny disposition. It also takes deep pockets and a lot of patience.
Miami, long term, is undervalued real estate.
This is Moishe Mana. He has become a major real estate player in South Florida after making a fortune first by running an independent moving company that has grown into what the New York Times called, quote, a double octopus of 15 businesses. Now that includes a 35-acre arts complex in Jersey City, New Jersey.
My name is Moishe Mana, and there's no title. I'm just, Moishe Mana.
Just Moishe Mana. Well, during this real estate cycle here in South Florida, Mana has amassed acres of real estate in Miami's Wynwood neighborhood and in downtown Miami. In short, he's made some big bets on South Florida real estate, but he's also wary of our economic history and concentration of our economy.
I think the real estate in Miami long term is cheap. But my issue here, when I look at the reset in Miami as far as the up and down, it's all coming back because, it's coming back to what Miami can offer and what Miami is offering today. The upside is there, but it's limited because Miami has been built for the last 100 years only on tourism. And there is so much you can build around this industry, tourism, restaurants, and recreation. So unless there will be another, some kind of change of industries, of jobs opportunities, some kind of a change, then the real estate will have some upside. It has great upside, but it's limited because of the nature of Miami for the 100 years. That it really didn't really bring jobs and the people that the young people they coming here and they finish school and they leave and the other people who come here they get bored. People with the money they get bored and then end up some of them coming back to New York.
Mana hopes to create the real estate conditions to diversify South Florida's industries and increase incomes and in turn push up demand for the properties he plans on building. Now, those are strategies that can take years before they succeed or fail. So what about this year?
You know what I see? I see, nothing going to change from 2017. I don't think there's dramatic change for Miami in terms of sudden people discovered the real estate market. It's going to be just the same, a little bit slow because there's, overbuilding now. I think there's a need for rental, if anything, and rental, small size rental for the young people to come live and work here. But other than this, I don't think will be much change as far as pricing. And unless there will be another recession, who knows, another year, two or three, nobody knows.
Carlos Rosso has experienced a couple of those recessions in South Florida real estate, including the housing collapse that threatened the company he works for, the Related Group. Rosso heads Related's condominium division. He also sees a more sober year ahead for local real estate.
We are not going to do as many launches as we did in the past year.
Is a launch meaning that you're going to put shovels in the ground?
Shovels in the ground. We have 7 buildings closing in 2017 of our other typical condo jobs. I think that there are already some signs for buyers of real estate in Miami that make them understand that Miami will continue to grow independent of these ups and downs that happen sometimes because of world economy and sometimes because of supply and demand in Miami.
Rosso points to the anticipated launch this year of the Brightline passenger train service between downtown Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and West Palm Beach, the opening of the Frost Science Museum in downtown Miami, and efforts to diversify the jobs base. It's been about 5 years of year-over-year price increases for homes and condominiums in South Florida. It's been quite a run. The median price of a single-family home in Miami-Dade in November hit $310,000. That's up 59% in 4 years. In Broward County, the median price of a single-family home, $318,000, up 51% over the same 4 years. Condominium prices? Well, they're up 38% in Miami-Dade, 58% in Broward County since 2012. No doubt, there are some condos originally built by Carlos Rosso's Related Group included in those statistics. But as his company delivers new condos to the market, he says this real estate market is not like what it was before the housing collapse.
I think this is a much healthier cycle, for a couple of reasons. First, There's a lot less leverage in all the jobs.
Less borrowed money.
Less borrowed money. And there is more real money from buyers, which has reduced the amount of buyers that we can get. You know, we've sort of controlled ourselves in the sense because it's more difficult to find buyers willing to put 50% deposits than 20% deposits in the past. Mm-hmm. And it was a little bit easier, in a sense, to get into trouble when banks were lending you 90 to 95% of construction costs.
Do you plan on holding level at that demanding 50% deposit in 2017?
Yes. Yeah, I think also the banks have realized that that's, you know, a correct way of measuring sort of supply and demand in pre-construction. You know, how can you measure how many Colombians or Argentinians are going to want to buy a condominium in 2017 in Florida?
Those international buyers have been vital for all kinds of real estate in South Florida, but especially rescuing residential real estate, condominiums particularly. And the U.S. dollar has been strengthening against foreign currencies, making it more expensive for Brazilians, Colombians, and Argentines to buy Florida properties. Plus now, mortgage rates have been rising, making it more expensive for buyers who have to borrow money to buy property. These are the current market conditions as South Florida real estate enters 2017. Now add a new president, who is a real estate developer himself after all, and loads of questions about his policies regarding banking regulations, taxes, and other issues that could affect real estate. Developers Carlos Rosso with the Related Group and Moishe Mana are both optimistic but uncertain. They're also patient as they look at the year ahead for South Florida real estate.
Well, my concern with Trump, you know what, until now everybody's trying to guess what he wants. Nobody knows what he wants. He said to you something now and tomorrow is something different. So I'm not hoping for a big jump in real estate here, not at all, you know. I'm hoping that market will stabilize, be more mature, that people can, you know, income will go higher and with it, the, you know, the pricing. Going up, just going up for the sake of speculation, we're not buyer for the short time, you know. So we look at it long term.
Carlos, what's your assessment of what role a President Trump may have on South Florida real estate over his four-year administration, at least the initial 4 years?
Well, put it this way. I think that we know who the president is right now, you know, and that's a big hurdle that we had to go over since September. August, September of last year, buyers were a little bit, you know, wary of making a decision whether to buy or not because they didn't know what the future of the U.S. was going to be or who was going to be the president. Now we know, you know, for good or for bad, you know, we know. You know, we want to see what's going to happen with lending. You know, that's a big sort of question mark, you know, if Dodd-Frank sort of gets, you know, softened up a little bit more.
Dodd-Frank was a centerpiece legislative response to the last Great Recession, which tightened up banking regulations and in some cases tightened up lending, how the banks would lend in the real estate markets.
Yeah, the balancing of the accounts of the banks, you know, how much they can have in certain categories, real estate and pre-development of real estate being one of them. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, we are a little bit on standby, on the sidelines, trying to understand where we are going. You know, we still don't know.
Moishe, who are the buyers of Miami real estate, of South Florida real estate in 2017?
Well, you have the hedge funds that discovered Miami from New York, and they are strong buyers. I believe, you know, because the market became much more global, and the economy became much more global. You got the Chinese going to be discovering, Miami in the short term. From the Far East, I think South American are done for now. And I think what's going to happen, you're going to have, there's another phenomena of European, French people that are showing interest in Miami because they are looking for potential exit from the mess that the country is in.
Carlos, how about for the Related Group and the properties you'll be marketing next year? Who are the buyers?
Look, I just landed from visiting some projects that we have in Brazil and that we have in Argentina. You know, when you look at the prices in Sao Paulo and in Buenos Aires of the properties that we sell, Miami is still super, super cheap. You know, and these countries are still having problems and are still having issues. Although Argentina is growing and recovering a little bit faster, you know, there are still questions. When you are faced with those questions and at the same time you realize that Miami is half of what we sell in Sao Paulo or half of what we sell in Buenos Aires, I will tell you that we'll still get a lot of buyers from these countries. Maybe less than before, but we're still going to get buyers from Latin America. We are still going to get buyers from Europe. We are getting a lot of French buyers, for example, right now, concerned with what is happening in Europe in general. And we are discovering new markets. In November, we did a trip to Turkey, and we sold a lot of units in Midtown, for example, to Turkish buyers that love the idea of buying smaller units in a good, you know, rental area of Miami like Midtown is. I am very positive that Miami will continue to attract buyers from all over the world. Last year, we sold close to 3,000 condos to 92 different nationalities from all over the world. Miami continues to grow, continues to improve, continues to sort of sophisticate itself, if you can say that. We still have the issue that Moshe pointed out and that we also agree what we need to have a better salary base, because at the end of the day, this cannot be a market that only sells to foreigners. At a certain point, you know, locals will start buying these homes or these condos. And for that, we need a stronger salary base.
What is that point, Carlos? Because a lot of those locals will say, look at this last cycle, and it jumped out of my income reach before I could even grab it.
It's a low interest rates. You know, people didn't know, really, the world didn't know what to do with their cash, and the cash reserves continue growing up and piling up. So real estate sort of followed that trend. Real estate became a commodity for buyers from all over the world that wanted to think where they were going to place part of their capital. And real estate sort of went up because of that demand. A lot of the demand is interest rates, right? Interest rates driven. I think that the point is that we need to create pockets of wealth in South Florida, you know, pockets of good paying jobs. Look what has happened in Brickell. You know, when I moved to Florida 15 years ago, I rented a small house in Coconut Grove. I had my first kid. We had our first kid, was just born.
Do you remember how much that rent was?
Oof, that rent was probably $1,200 for a small cottage in Coconut Grove. But I remember the first weekend, you know, we said with my wife, hey, let's go for a walk to an area of downtown where we're going to see a little bit of people, you know. And we came 2001 to Brickell on a Saturday morning, and there was no one. There were the people that do the maintenance of the buildings, sweeping the sidewalks, and we tell them, so where are the people? And they tell us, nobody lives here.
That's changed considerably in the past 15 years. According to the Census Bureau data crunched by the Downtown Development Authority in Miami, the residential population in the Brickell neighborhood has almost tripled since 2000, with the median household income now of $102,000, easily twice the countywide median income level. So, still to come, using real estate as a tool to grow jobs and paychecks.
Our purpose in Miami, and it's stated purpose, that we're going to change Miami. And we're going to bring the jobs to Miami. We're going to bring the industries to Miami. Jobs, you know. And all the rest will fall in place. Without the jobs, nothing happening.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, talking about real estate in 2017 in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. At its most basic level, the real estate business is about creating space for people to do things. Rest, work, eat, play, to live. In South Florida, those spaces are often expensive compared to what residents earn. There have been many studies showing the region is among the least affordable in the United States. That's driven by how the real estate market, the land, is limited since we're squeezed between the Atlantic Ocean and the Everglades, and by our job market, which is dominated by traditionally lower-paying jobs. About a third of the workforce in South Florida work in the retail trade or hospitality industries. Important work, but work that usually does not come with a big paycheck. The average yearly pay in South Florida is just over $42,000. That's less than the average wage in Jacksonville, Naples, the Space Coast, and Tampa. But it has not held back South Florida real estate. The rebound since the Great Recession has lifted prices, but nothing like what the higher end of the market has experienced, especially among neighborhoods that have gotten more and more crowded. These are the areas where developers Moshe Mana and Carlos Rosso of the Related Group have focused their efforts, building condominium buildings in the case of Related, or amassing parcels for development in the case of Mana.
I'm looking at our project we're doing in a philosophical way, you know. and a much bigger, in a much bigger picture. You see, before the Industrial Revolution, people used to live in the same street, work in the same street, and date in the same street, and go out in the same street. So, and then as the Industrial Revolution came, people start traveling further and further and further, you know? So now there is a different process. People are going to go back into the same place where they work, into the same place where they, you know, where they live, and do not want to travel far because it's too long, it's too expensive. So that's why I believe that once you start really like it, that's what's happening in Brickell. People live there and work there, you know? So the neighborhoods that I'm building, that we're building here, it's we look at it as a whole, you know, where people work, live, and create, and you know, and spend time, you know? So that's why I'm not worried. And it's a process. It's not going to be developed overnight, but it's going to be developed in a way where it's going to attract more and more and more people and make it more affordable. And the whole idea is really getting this millennium to sit in a place and give them some frame, some roots to that they can put the, you know, they can put their shoes and sit down and work, you know, and create. And that's what we're working on. And some of this project, we are partners with the project, with the people that we're bringing on board, you know, with the high tech, with the fashion, and with the restaurant, whatever it is. So we're investing in these businesses as well. So we're creating a whole neighborhood, and we're looking at it as a whole ecosystem, you know, that we're building. That's why we bought so much properties, because that's the only way to build an ecosystem when you have enough of critical mass in a given area.
Moisha, how is your philosophy about real estate informing the decisions you're making on the kinds of inventory of housing units that you plan on bringing to the market in the next several years locally?
You know, I'm not looking at it this way, you know, different than other developers. And, you know, George Perez did tremendous job in Miami. You know, he really did tremendous, tremendous job, tremendous project. He was fundamental, you know, like so important for what he did. But our philosophy is different than George is doing, you know, and, you know, related doing. Because we are we have reserves for development, you know, and we're buying cheap enough wherever we go, and that in the future we can continue developing it. So we're developing it in pieces and not as a whole. And if it goes down, it goes down, you know. I mean, usually we buy real estate when time is bad. We don't buy real estate when it's too good, you know. So, but we have so far enough of a project that we can make a whole different change in Miami with the size of the investment we're doing, with the size of the vision, and we are not concentrating on developing condos now. This is not what we want to do. We want to build the micro units. We want to build the shared office space, the extended stay, the jobs, and this is what the fashion, and that's what we are concentrating in, building neighborhoods. So in a way, it's a little bit not connected to the total overall real estate. It's always connected to some degree, but it's a different kind of outlook at the investment.
It's also a different strategy. It's very purposeful from the get-go about creating, as you mentioned, an entire ecosystem. It's not just a residential building or an apartment building or a mixed-use building even that could have a few floors of retail and then a few floors of office and a few floors of apartment or residential living. It's very holistic, and it's being directed at a marketplace. Being as prescriptive as it is, Moisha, in your experience, what are the risks to that prescription if it doesn't take?
There's always risk in this lifetime, okay? The risk is that we sit on land and there's always risk, but it's very limited because the way we're buying it, the way we're assembling it, the way we're looking at it, and every building it's part of a bigger puzzle, you know? So it's not just a standalone building that I need to get rid of it because it's liability for me. Our purpose in Miami, and it's stated purpose, that we're going to change Miami, and we're going to bring the jobs to Miami, we're going to bring the industries to Miami. Jobs, you know, and all the rest will fall in place. Without the jobs, nothing happening.
I grew up in Iowa, Moisha and Carlos, and there was a famous movie about a farmer in Iowa called The Field of Dreams. The line in that film is, if you build it, they will come.
Hey, Annie! Annie, what was that?
We didn't hear anything.
And Moshe, that's what I keep hearing in my head as you talk about this ecosystem and you bringing the companies here, you bringing the jobs here to diversify the economy, to help fill in and fill up the residential developments that you've got planned.
I've done it many times before. You know, I built other areas where I put other businesses in them. And area when I went to urban areas, I put my businesses in them, and the areas developed over the years. But now, because of our experience, we can really do it in a little bit more expedited rate that the other businesses did. But definitely, I'm very happy with the with what we do, with the kind of people we work with the vision that we're setting up, and I feel like I have a purpose for everything I'm doing. You know, and money is not always the first thing, but you do it right, money will come with it. You know,
Moshe's strategy is really prescriptive, as I described it to him. Identifying a geographic spot, gathering up some of the parcels, and then being very cognizant of creating a community where there really hasn't been, or diversifying a community which had been concentrated in some cases. Carlos, that's not the related MO.
We really like to build buildings. You know, we are a little bit different. We really love to build these towers and see people living in them and the lights on and all the uses that attract each other. Because at the end of the day, we are not speculating on land. You know, we are really building buildings. And we do it not just from the condo side. You know, we are doing tremendous works on the rental side. You know, we have also close to 4,000 units being delivered next year. We try to create buildings and cities through the construction of these physical spaces and buildings.
Philosophically, has the direction of the kinds of properties that Related Companies wants to bring to this market, is it changing? How has that evolved over the years from what it had been doing in the last cycle, this cycle, and what you can anticipate maybe is the next cycle?
First, let me tell you one thing. You know, we are a little bit more opportunistic developers rather than land banking developers. You know, Moshe's focus is maybe, you know, land banking and creating this value and then, you know, thinking how really to parcel out and develop these properties. We like to build buildings.
Land banking means just buying parcels,
yes,
not building them, developing
them.
Yeah. Right.
We built close to 80,000 units right now. People say that one in every four people that live in Brickell live in a building developed by Related. And those are numbers that are, you know, that fill us with pride. So we start building cities, you know, and we really start building this urban life that we preach all the time, this 24/7 life in downtown, which is what we want to see. You know, we really believe that when people live together in urban areas, that's when all the things that Moshe was talking about, the exchange of work, of relationships, of art, starts happening.
Carlos Rosso is the head of condominiums at the Related Group, and Moshe Mana heads his own real estate development company active in downtown Miami and the Wynwood neighborhood. Still to come on our program, how another developer hopes to marry South Florida's art, culture, and technology industries through real estate.
This is about cultural neighborhoods, neighborhoods that are inspired by art, technology, innovation, and just a different way of looking at real estate entirely.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, Real Estate in 2017. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. A real estate event in South Florida is not a buttoned-up, formal business affair. Despite the big dollars that are usually involved, they can be loud, lively, and offbeat.
Hello, 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 hello.
This is Tony Cho.
Can I get a... Oh, yeah!
It was late November of last year.
Can I get a magic?
He is president and CEO of Metro One, a real estate brokerage and developer. He was welcoming a crowd of several dozen people gathered in a corner lot of an industrial area of Little Haiti. It's part of a 15-acre project he is developing with partner Bob Zangrillo that they call Magic City Innovation District. The event was timed to kick off with Art Basel as a way to highlight the developer's ambitious plans to remake this part of the neighborhood that ranges from light industrial buildings to what used to be a mobile home park. Their idea is to create an arts, entertainment, and technology campus with office, retail, and housing.
Just a little taste of what we plan to bring to Miami, and we hope that you guys enjoy.
But this was not the time nor place to talk zoning rules, square footage, or capital rates. After all, there was a didgeridoo to hear as the sun went down in what was described as rising the vibration of the site. Amid the Burning Man vibe is a sculpture garden featuring 12-foot-high aluminum letters spelling out magic. And a separate piece that's the at symbol you know from email addresses and from Twitter. Developer Bob Zangrillo told the crowd he and Tony Cho, his partner, had been working for 4 years assembling the parcels of land, creating their vision to remake the neighborhood.
You know, at this point it's Tony and I leading an effort to try to make Miami an innovation hub, both on a local level for Miami and on a global level for our planet.
Zangrillo is a software and internet commerce entrepreneur who runs a firm that invests now in companies like Uber and Facebook, as well as South Florida real estate. But not just anywhere in South Florida. His firm's website describes their real estate strategy as, quote, within a 30-mile radius of downtown Miami. It is concentrated on purpose. We spoke as the festivities at the Sculpture Garden were still taking shape.
You know, we think that, you know, being a former tech CEO and a big private investor and venture, that the Miami market does not have a campus-like environment for people to have collision points together. And in order to really promote innovation, like-minded people like to be together. Miami was missing that. And so everybody was fractured. There's a lot of entrepreneurial people here. And they were kind of, the city was screaming out for a project to bring those leaders together, you know, across media, technology, and bring that creative class to have a campus-like environment.
3 weeks after the Sculpture Garden event, I met up again with the other half of the development team behind the Magic City Innovation District project. Tony Cho and I went on a driving tour around the 15 acres in Little Haiti that he hopes to create its own economic ecosystem of arts, retail, technology, and living space.
The first motto of my company was Think, Live, Urban. This was 2005. And back then, people equated urban with like a hip-hop, you know, festival. And I drilled this into people's mind that, hey, this is about urban revitalization. This is about cultural neighborhoods, neighborhoods that are inspired by art, technology, innovation, and just a different way of looking at real estate entirely. It's not building buildings or renovating buildings, but building neighborhoods and creating community.
Arguably, this is not a new strategy for developers in South Florida. Gated communities and retirement villages have been built with the same basic premise. But Cho's version includes almost a curation of development pieces based upon arts and culture economic drivers. It's a lesson, he says, he learned with his first South Florida real estate investment experience.
In 2001, I bought my first real estate, I made my first real estate investment in a condo at Biscayne 21 condo for $66,000. With basically money that I had borrowed from a loan shark in Hialeah at 11%. And this was
literally a loan shark, or just somebody charging you
a higher interest rate? Okay.
Yeah, it's somebody who was charging me. It's a legal interest rate. It was 11%. Right. But it was basically somebody who did, you know, private hard money loans. And it was the best hard money I borrowed, because that was right when the Performing Arts Center was announced. And
The Adrian Arts Center. Right?
Yeah, the Adrian Arts Center, but it was called the Performing Arts Center back then. And a year later, I sold it for $180,000. And that was kind of my aha moment about how arts and culture really play into revitalizing and stimulating the real estate market in a specific area.
He's hoping to apply those same lessons to his Magic City plans in Little Haiti. It's a big vision with a big price tag, an estimated $1 billion over various phases of renovating some buildings and constructing new ones, phases that will extend out over the next several years and real estate cycles if the project comes to completion.
I will tell you that, you know, prior to the election, you know, I felt over the last 6 to 9 months, there's certainly been a slowdown in velocity and transaction volume. But, you know, my experience is unique because I'm busier than I've ever been. But then you go to other places and you talk to luxury developers, they've seen a dramatic slowdown. The dollar's strong. South Americans don't have buying power. And so there's certainly it's a mixed bag right now. This time around, I feel a slowdown. I feel somewhat of a softening. But I don't forecast that to be for very long. And I don't forecast it to be very deep. I consider us in a stabilization period. You know, prices are high, construction costs are really high, and, you know, investors are more cautious. But then again, I think that these are only temporary things, and then people get re-inspired.
When you take a look at this real estate market and what it's gone through over the past 6 years, 7 years or so in this cycle, Tony, compare that with the broader economic reality in South Florida. And what I mean by that is job growth came back, certainly. Hospitality came back. Real estate came back. Median incomes have been flat. As a developer, how do you put those two things together, and how do you begin to project that out into the future and the sustainability of the market?
It's a really good question. You know, it all boils down to affordability and what people can pay for. And I think the specific type of real estate that I'm focused on is more catered towards the creative class, the creative working class. And so that's why providing smaller spaces with bigger amenities is the way to go, because, you know, people can afford it more easily. And so the 90% or the 99% of the world can't live on Brickell, can't live on Miami Beach. And so what we're focused on in places like Little River and Little Haiti is providing more accessible housing solutions in places that you want to be in. And so you're 100% right. And I think that's why we saw a change this election, is because for most of the average people, you know, you haven't seen any job, you know, any wage growth. And so their lives haven't improved much, although unemployment has been halved, you know, and, you know, you've seen improvements there. But there's generally a disconnect between the haves and the have-nots. And I think that it is the biggest conundrum and issue that we face in the 21st century, is creating cities for everyone that are sustainable, because you can't just push people over there who don't have the resources and expect that to be a way to have a harmonious community.
Developer Tony Cho. Still to come, the zoning approach encouraging this kind of community in waiting economic development.
The anticipation was that there would actually be a rebound in the market. We have expanded growth. You also have to understand the timeline for these developments is often 20, 30 years.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. We're talking about real estate in South Florida in 2017. Earlier, we heard from developers about their tempered outlook for the market this year and how two of them have gathered together several acres of land with the vision of building entire communities, not just a condominium building or an apartment building or an office building, but whole communities to live, work, and play. Such a vision takes deep pockets and a lot of patience. It also has been helped by a change in laws governing how specific land can be used. In the city of Miami, a special plan was created in 2009 to encourage developers to think bigger. It's called, appropriately enough, Special Area Plans. Andres Viglucci is the urban affairs reporter for our partner, the Miami Herald.
It's a section of the Miami 21 zoning plan that went into effect a few years ago. It's basically a carve-out that allows property owners with 9 acres or more to apply for special zoning consideration from the city of Miami and devise a project that allows them to draw outside of the strict zoning rules. So they can add density, they can create streets, they can do creative things that, in theory, creates a real neighborhood and not just an isolated development.
What's magic about 9 acres or more?
It's about 3 or 4 city blocks. And the city figured that was about a good size that could be integrated into something more than just lot by lot type of development.
And the intent of this, when it was put together in 2009, it was essentially at the worst of the worst in the last real estate cycle. So was this in response to the housing collapse? And the real estate collapse?
On the contrary, it was an anticipation of greater, faster growth in the city of Miami. The conception at the time, which I think still holds, is that a lot of areas of the city are underdeveloped, in need of redevelopment, or simply there were some large undeveloped tracts at that point. And they figured, let's do some planning holistically instead of just doing lot-by-lot disconnected type of development. And instead of, for instance, having an isolated building that has to have its own parking garage and an SAP, they could put all the parking in one area, opening up streets for pedestrians, ground-level development, commercial, homes, apartments, townhouses, any kind of flexible mix.
So here we are, as the real estate cycle has grown considerably in the last 7 or 8 years since the beginning of these SAPs. How have these new regulations begun to reshape neighborhoods like Wynwood and Little Haiti?
I think they've encouraged developers to assemble properties to meet the 9 acres or more. Some of them are 20 acres, quite large, including the Mana Wynwood special area plan that was recently approved. It's humongous. The anticipation was that there would actually be a rebound in the market. We have expanded growth. You also have to understand the timeline for these developments is often 20, 30 years. So the conception is they're not going to be all built out at once. They're going to be built gradually over a period of time, but you'll be following a rational plan that, of course, can be changed, but basically sets up a blueprint for the future.
And there has been some argument that this becomes more prescriptive development to an area like a Little Haiti or like a Wynwood that had developed arguably organically through the course of several generations and had a much more humanistic feel to it as opposed to a real specific vision implanted into the neighborhood.
One of the concepts of the SAP is that in exchange for the additional height or density, a developer has to provide public amenities, public spaces, streets, any number of things. So the thought is you could have a balance. However, given that some of these SAPs are in low-scale single-family or at least abutting single-family neighborhoods, historic neighborhoods in some cases, it seems rather abrupt, especially when you see these renderings with these towers sprouting out of very low-scale, older, established neighborhoods. And that's causing people to be alarmed and to push back against these.
Miami Herald Urban Affairs reporter Andres Viglucci. Still to come, a veteran South Florida housing market analyst thinks this is the end of the boom for a portion of the real estate market. But the average homeowners, he says, will be fine.
For luxury condominiums, we're in the ninth inning. For lower and middle price product, I don't see any problem at all.
This is the Sunshine Economy, talking about real estate today. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. It's a worn-out metaphor to measure the real estate market in baseball innings. The first three innings of a ball game are the early innings, and there's still a lot of baseball left to be played. In the real estate market, the early innings means prices have plenty of room to increase. The last three innings and the end could be coming soon, both to the baseball game and the real estate market. But like baseball, there's no clock on real estate. They both can go into extra innings. The game, or a rising real estate market, lasts as long as it lasts until something happens for it to end, a walk-off home run in baseball or something else in real estate. The baseball real estate metaphor may be crude, but it's become shorthand for where the market is in its cycle of growing prices or declining prices. So I put the baseball real estate question to Jack McKay. He's been studying and analyzing South Florida's real estate market for the last couple of decades.
For luxury condominiums, we're in the ninth inning. For lower and middle price product, I don't see any problem at all, but we've definitely reached the pinnacle of pricing for the luxury condo sector. It's already on its way down now.
McKay runs McKay Research and Consulting, and he's not an economic optimist. While he thinks the big dollar real estate market boom over the last several years is going bust, He also says the average housing market will be fine. He spoke to us via Skype from his office in Deerfield Beach.
Well, the problem in South Florida is that the vast majority of new construction over the last 10 years has been in the upper-end condo segment or upper-end single family. Even apartments have all been Class A with very expensive rental prices. Now, for the lower and middle price range, and especially for single-family homes, we've had an ever-increasing demand from the population migration, which has become very extensive again now. We had 360,000 new people move to Florida in 2016, and about 18% of those make their way to South Florida. But we've had no new construction in those price ranges, or absolute minimal construction. So for those looking to buy a new single-family home, they're going to find that even if we enter a recession in 2017, which I believe we will, prices will maintain their value and most likely will continue to increase just simply from demand and supply fundamentals.
So, Jack, you think we're going to be in an economic recession or a high-end luxury housing market recession in South Florida?
I think we're going to be in a national recession. Now, how it will affect the United States is going to be very different. Last decade, real estate dropped. It didn't matter what price range, what location, what geography, who the developer was, everything went down. This time around, it's going to be different. In South Florida, because we've had such a oversaturation of new development in luxury condominiums, and now we see a declining supply of buyers, those prices are going to go down. At the other end, we're going to see prices maintain or go up. It's going to affect different parts of the country differently this time.
This time is different. That's a phrase that always piques my interest. The last time the housing market here in South Florida experienced a national economic recession was, of course, 2008, 2009, and it was disastrous. And some homeowners are still trying to put together their financial pieces and their lives from there.
Yes, and you know what's interesting, Tom, is even though prices have continued to increase over the last 4 years, if you compare prices now with where they were at the pinnacle of pricing last decade in 2006, we're still about 25 to 28% lower in value than we were at that time. So many people that held on to their homes that didn't lose them through foreclosure still have not realized an equilibrium in pricing with where they were 10 years ago.
We heard on the condominium side, we've heard developers such as Carlos Rosso with the related companies say it is different this time. There's less leverage, less borrowed money, and so thus more stable and more financial ability to withstand any kind of potential downturn.
Well, with all due respect to Carlos, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for him, I don't agree with that. I think that developers are in a much better position now because they have taken larger deposits from those buyers. And because of changes in Florida law, they are now allowed that if the buyer doesn't close and they have to sell it for a lower price, that they can keep up to the entire amount of the buyer's deposit as liquidated damages. So for the developers, they're in a much better position. If somebody walks away at this point, they can turn around and sell it for half the price and still come out with the full price that they had wanted to get in the beginning. So they're in a better shape. Now, for the foreign investors that have put down 50% on many of these condos in Miami, they're going to lose money. If they bought early on and contracted early because the exchange rate was so much more favorable for them, they can actually sell at a lower price than their contract is and still come out ahead. But for many of them, and especially those that have bought in the last year to 18 months, they're going to end up losing money.
So this is on the high side of the market, the luxury side, and the condominium side. You're still content with the middle of the market, the median home, $200,000, $400,000 price range. You think that can withstand what you're anticipating is to be an economic recession this year?
That's correct. I think what we're going to see is the real negative outcome of these price gains is South Florida is again becoming unaffordable. Our household incomes in the three counties of South Florida average about $45,000 to $46,000 a year, yet the median price of a home now is over $300,000 again. A good rule of thumb is you should only buy a home that's roughly about four times of what your income is, which means we need to be building a lot of homes in the $150,000 to $200,000 price range. I challenge anybody to try and find a home in that price. You're going to end up living someplace very far away from work and possibly in a neighborhood that you wouldn't necessarily choose. It's very difficult for the locals, but now we have a lot of folks that are retiring, the baby boomer generation, not just from the Northeast United States, but from Northeast Canada, from Western Europe, from Latin America, and we get buyers from all four points on the compass here. So we've got a bigger pool to draw from. Many of those buyers in other states have had better incomes. They can afford the higher pricing that we have down here. But it could mean that we see an exodus of locals, especially the younger ones with college degrees and no good jobs available for them. And for those living on a fixed income that may be more middle class, they may find that their housing expenses just don't allow them to enjoy the standard of living that they've become accustomed to.
Jack, what are you looking at that perhaps you could be wrong about?
Well, I was wrong about the election. And I think that there's so many uncertain factors right now because government, especially at the federal level, is going to change dramatically. So what happens with banking policy? I mean, I think we're going to see more free money available for buyers. At the same point, we're probably going to see the foreclosure rate that has gotten back down to 1% increase again as more people that are necessarily not very solid financially will be able to take out loans, buy properties, and then not be able to make their mortgage payments. My big concern here is for us to continue to grow, we have to have stronger education system, and we have to have better availability of housing for the vast majority of Americans that live here and want to move here. Otherwise, we're liable to shut down the growth for South Florida.
Jack McCabe of McCabe Research and Consulting. Wanda Miles is our technical director today. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks as always for listening.